This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour with Pastor David M. Atkinson. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your interest and request that you pray for this ministry. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Now here is Pastor Atkinson.
We've come to the last message to try to get us to lock in on this theme, making a difference. I'm going to begin to read at the fifth verse of John 6, John 6, 5. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip, whence or from where shall we buy bread that these may eat? Now verse 8. One of his disciples, Andrew, saith unto him, there is a lad here which hath five barley loaves and two small fishes, but what are they among so many? And Jesus said, make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were sat down, and likewise of the fishes, as much as they would. When they were filled, he said unto the disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Our text for this series has been John 6, verse 9a. There is a lad here. My, how the Lord used that little boy. In the last message, we were considering the fact that we must make a difference where we are. We must make a difference where we are, not where we think we would rather be. This lad here seemed to be lost in the crowd, but he made a difference where he was. Our theme song this year is Brighten the Corner, where you are. It doesn't read Brighten the Corner where you wish you were. And it's only a corner. The songwriter specifies, not a big arena. It's not a stadium. Brighten the corner where you are. You may feel like you're hemmed in. You may feel like you're locked into a little corner. But go ahead and brighten the corner where you find yourself. And the songwriter continued, do not wait until some deed of greatness you may do. Do not wait to shed your light afar. He's referring to some glamorous or romantic spot. Oh, if I could just be in Papua New Guinea. If I could just be in Australia. Oh, if I could just get to Palm Springs. If I could just get to South Texas. If I could just get there. If I could just get the promotion. No, the songwriter says, do not wait until some deed of greatness you may do. Do not wait to shed your light afar in that never, never land out there. You know, Sala Salu? Have you heard that little poem? Oh, it's one of those children's rhyming books. If I could just get the Sala Salu, everything would be wonderful. You know about Sala Salu Baptist Church. Why? if I could just move to Texas and become a member of Sala Salou Baptist Church, the pastor would be perfect. The assistant pastor would be perfect. Every deacon would be perfect. Every orchestra member would be perfect. All the members would be perfect if I could just get to Sala Salou Baptist Church. That romantic, glamorous construct in the mind. Do not wait to shed your light afar. Sala Salou or San Bernardino or Hawaii. Don't wait to shed your light afar in that glamorous, romantic place. Right in the corner where you are. You're just kidding yourself. You won't do some little thing to give glory to God and right in the corner where you are at Dyer Baptist Church. You'll not do it in the largest mega church in the world. You won't do it with maple trees that shed their leaves in the winter. You won't do it in Southern California with the palm trees either, right in the corner where you are. Think about that little Hebrew slave girl. Think about her. She was a little Hebrew slave girl. You find her story in 2 Kings 5, verses 1 and 4. She'd been carried off a prisoner of war. Now, how would you like those apples? How would you like to be a little girl and be carried off as a prisoner of war? She'd been carried off from Israel to Syria. Our day is not the first time Syria has had problems. Syria has long been known for meanness. This little Hebrew girl was carried off to big, bad old Syria. And she was a servant to the wife of the captain of all the armies of Syria. And this little girl just spoke 20 words. She's in a hostile land. I don't know if I can remember all her words, but she said, Would God, my lord, my mistress's husband, the captain of all the armies, were with the prophet, and he could be healed. It's 20 words. And the 20 words of that little prisoner of war led to the healing of Naaman, the captain of all the armies of that big, bad country, Syria. She didn't spend every day pouting about the fact that she was in Syria and she wasn't back at home with her parents in Israel. She brightened the corner where she was, even in Syria. Now, I want you to think about that place where you want to be. You know the name of the town. You know what the flowers are like. You know what January is like there. And you just can't wait to get there. And once you get there, oh, are you ever going to serve the Lord? And you will not if you do not serve him right here in the Rust Belt. G. Campbell Morgan quoted a powerful poem in his treatment on Genesis. The book is a Bible survey, but he talks about each of the books of the Bible. And I don't know who wrote the poem, but G. Campbell Morgan quotes it without attribution. The poem goes like this. For me, to have made one soul the better for my birth. Think about it. When it comes your time to pass on, will one soul, just one person, be better for your birth? To have made one soul the better for my birth, to have added but one flower to the garden of the earth, to have struck one blow for truth in the daily fight with lies. Do you realize? In this election cycle, now don't get nervous. I'm not even going to promote the Greens. Do you realize in this election cycle, lies have moved front and center in the politics of America? And the worst of it is, they get away with it. We are living in a culture of lies being completely acceptable. People want to live in a world of lies. They want to live in it. They want to escape into a pseudo-reality. They don't even care anymore about the lies. Now, people who are willing to be that way will get the kind of government they deserve. We need to speak for truth. And Campbell Morgan quoted the poem, said, "To have struck one blow for truth in the daily fight with lies, to have done one deed of right in the face of calumnies, to have sown in the souls of men one thought that will not die, to have been a link in the chain of life shall be immortality." I write poems because I want our grandchildren to remember when they throw the dirt on my casket that I once lived. I write poems because I want some people in South Carolina to remember he was around at least for a little while. Do something. Paint a wall. Sweep a floor. Write in a journal. Send cards of encouragement. Do something. Anybody can do something. But there's more we can learn from our text. Andrew, without pomp or ceremony, almost as an afterthought. Can't you just picture it? They're trying to solve the problem of feeding more than 5,000 people. And they're the council, you know, the committee. The disciples are getting together. Jesus wants us to feed all these people. And this little boy insinuates, he wiggles his way up to just behind the disciples. And perhaps Peter says, get back. Don't bother the master. We've got a big problem to solve. But the little fellow won't take no for an answer. He just keeps creeping closer to Jesus. And finally, he tugs on Andrew's robe. Now, I don't wear robes, so the tug wasn't quite as effective. Just imagine, he tugs on Andrew's robe. And, "What do you want, kid?" I said the word, didn't I? I don't like it. But I said it for shock value, because that's what you would say. That's what I would say. "Kid, what do you want? Leave me alone. We've got a big problem." "What's that? You say you got your sack lunch?" The kid was ignored, at least for some time. And Andrew, as an afterthought, "Well, all right. Hush up. Jesus, he's yanking my robe. This is a lad with 5 barley loaves and 2 fishes, but I know what are those among so many." There's a lad here. Notice that the indefinite article is used. It's indefinite. A lad. Andrew doesn't even make this lad definite or specific. He lets this little lad stay lost in the crowd. He's indefinite. He's just a lad. Andrew leaves this lad somewhat faceless, faceless and nameless. So here's the sixth truth that we can learn about making a difference. We make a difference for God's glory and the good of others when we do it not for our own specific credit. He remains faceless and nameless. He's a lad. We make a difference when we do it not for our own specific credit, fame, or celebrityhood. Ladies and gentlemen, we're living in the age when Christian singers have agents. Agents who manage their careers and promote them. If you don't know it, you need to study about how the so-called Christian music labels in Nashville work. You need to understand that when it comes to these big labels, there is one bottom line, and that is the money that will come from the fame. I could give you story after story after story of people who have refused to play that game and sell their soul. When it comes to the big labels, the purpose is fame, and the fame is all about money. This was just the lad. He never got his name in the Bible, but he made a difference. He remains simply and without fanfare what the Greek calls a paiderion, an unnamed child. That's all he is. Oh, don't say that. Say, that's all he was. God used him to feed about 8,000 people. That's all. This little faceless, nameless lad was used to do. I referred earlier to the little maid, the little servant girl, back in 2 Kings 5. She also remains nameless. Nameless, faceless. She comes on the page of scriptures for 3 or 4 verses. She moves off the pages of scripture. As far as I know, she's never heard from again, and she remains a little maid servant girl. And God impacted all the armies of Syria because of that little nameless, faceless servant girl. The poet Thomas Gray left us many powerful lines in his poem, Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard. Now get it. The poem is called Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard. So he's in the country churchyard, just like my first little church, where the cemetery is out behind. And the poet took a walk through the cemetery. And he starts to look at the grave markers and the dates. And he sees that there's one grave marker that memorializes a man who died very young. And there's not a whole lot there. But if you subtract the dates, you see he was quite young when he died. What did he do? Does it matter that he ever lived? Now, Gray addresses this issue in his poem. It's like an epitaph. Gray wrote, "Full many a gem of purest ray serene, the dark unfathomed caves of ocean bear. There are many jewels down at the bottom of the oceans and seas that have never been seen by human eyes. Those gems are not famous. They are not notorious. Their praises are not sung. They are just glistening jewels, either at the bottom of a sea or down in the dirt in South Africa. No human eyes have ever seen those gems. He continues, full many a flower is born to blush unseen and waste its sweetness on the air. There were hundreds of trilliums up in Ontario, Canada this spring. Hundreds of trilliums that poked their little heads through the soft and wet Ontario soil. Hundreds of trilliums. Some of them are white. Some of them are pink and purplish. There were hundreds of trilliums that bloomed this spring in Ontario for one reason: the glory of God. Nobody saw them. Nobody saw them. The farm boy didn't see them. Not even a dog saw them. But they bloomed for the glory of God. Are you willing to serve God as an unnamed, unspecified little lad or little servant girl or a gem in the bottom of the sea that nobody ever gets to see, or a flower in the forest that nobody ever gets to see? Are you willing? If you are, you can make a difference. You'll make a difference to God. We're not supposed to be doing what we're doing to be seen of men. Jesus was very hard on people who did what they did to be seen of men. But the apostles said, ye serve the Lord Christ. Ye serve the Lord Christ. I'm not trying to embarrass. I'm not mentioning names. Look. The one or two who stayed here Friday night, turned the front of this auditorium into a beautiful wedding chapel, remain to most of us at this moment unnamed and unknown. They didn't do it so you would know. They did it because it needed to be done. This little boy didn't give his lunch to get his name in the record. The little servant girl didn't do it back when she was in Syria to get her name up in lights. She did it because there was a need and it needed to be done. Gray's poem concludes, here rests his head. He's deceased. Here rests his head upon the lap of earth. A youth to fortune and to fame unknown. He gained from heaven, 'twas all he wished, a friend. He gained from heaven. He gained from heaven, 'twas all he wished, a friend. We make a difference when we're willing to serve in an unspecified, indefinite, unknown way. There is a lad here. Then let's go on. Look at verse 9b. 9b. We've read it before, but hear it again. The lad had 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. Number 7. We make a difference with what we have. We make a difference with what we have. Not what we would like to have. Oh, you say you're repetitious. Well, not so. I said before, we make a difference where we are, not where we would like to be. Now I'm saying we make a difference with what we have, not what we'd like to have. I always wanted to have hair like Dr. Lee Robertson. Now you would have had to have known him or at least seen pictures of him. His hair was wavy. His hair was wavy. Oh, I thought, a preacher who's really going to preach needs wavy hair. And then I saw J. Harold Smith, originally of Arkansas, and he had white hair. Oh, white hair. And then Lee Robertson's hair turned white. And I thought, oh, I guess you can see, I never got the waves. I'm going to embarrass her now. I'm going to embarrass her now, but it serves her right. And you better pray for it. This is the truth. When my sideburns, oh, this is funny. Will someone please have me for dinner? When my sideburns, oh, I love this one. And dear, I do love you. When my sideburns started to turn white, and then just a little bit above the ear, Jane let it go on for about 6 months, and she finally said, look, if you are going to color the top of your hair, you might as well color the sideburns and the stuff around the ear. I'm still not coloring anything. And I don't have as much left to color as I did when she said that. I would love to have colored my hair pure white. But oh, this is just it. Always wanted to have what Dr. Robertson had. And always wanted to have what Dr. J. Harold Smith had. I thought it would help my preaching. We make a difference with what we have, not what we think we'd like to have. Now, this boy's bread was not made of wheat. It wasn't made of wheat. It was made of barley. And Charles Ryrie says that barley was the chief food of the common people. All this boy's mother could afford to send with him was the cheap food of the common people. Barley bread. And the other ingredient of this meal was fish, not beefsteak or caviar. Now we're in the fish family, aren't we? But thank God it wasn't caviar. Common, cheap barley bread and not beefsteak or caviar. Just fish, two small ones at that. And there are 45 species of fish in the Holy Land. The boy had cheap bread and small fish, but God used him to satisfy the hunger of more than 5,000 people. Not only is it counterproductive, ungrateful, and unthankful to covet or pine for another hillside, another place of service, it's counterproductive to covet or pine for a different kind of bread. It's counterproductive to long or pine for a different area of service, and it's counterproductive to pine or long after a different kind of bread or more bread. Use the bread God has given you. That's enough. Use the bread God has given you. It's enough for God to do through you what he wants to do. Teenagers, young ladies, you don't have to look like her to do what God has for you. And young gentlemen, you don't have to be quite as athletic as him to do what God wants you to do. Now, do the best with what God has given you, but do with what God has given. Don't pine after some face in a glamour magazine. God gives every one of us a lunch at the beginning of the day. Yeah, you got one right now. Take a look at your lunch. God gives every one of us a lunch at the beginning of the day. And all God asks is that we use the lunch he has given us. Will you do that? Will you use the lunch God has given you? Let us not miss the wisdom in that profound little aphorism that has been used so often it's almost become trite. Let's not miss the profound wisdom in the statement, if life hands you lemons, make lemonade. Well, you say, I've heard that a dozen times. Well, then if life handed you lemons, are you making lemonade? Don't like my nose. Don't like my voice. And I don't. I would love to have had a voice like the voice of the former pastor of the Bellevue Baptist Church of Memphis, Tennessee, Adrian Rogers. Have you ever heard him? You can be honest. I would love to have had a preaching voice like Adrian Rogers of Memphis, Tennessee. But I don't. I squawk and I squeak. And sometimes my voice breaks up. But I'm going to use it until the Lord takes me home. The Lord does not require that we all be academically brilliant. The Lord does not require that we all be child prodigies. The Lord asks that we be faithful stewards of that which he has given to us. He asks us to conscientiously and consistently use the bread he's given to us. Susanna Wesley, the mother of Methodism, lived by deliberate, habitual methods. That's why it's called Methodism. She lived by habitual methods and self-monitoring questions. She was serious about the Christian life. Even before she got saved, she lived by asking herself questions and by methods. One of the self-monitoring questions that Susanna Wesley asked herself was this: how shall I give answer to the Lord when he shall command me to give an account of my stewardship of time and talents? How shall I answer the Lord when he shall command me to give answer or account of my stewardship of time and talents? Study the book of Romans. Romans 12. We've not all been given the same bread. We've not all been given the same fish. Some of us are teachers. Some of us are mercy showers. Some of us are prophets. We call it out black and white. Others are rulers, administrators. God didn't put the same bread in all of our baskets. All he asks is that we use the bread he put in our basket. I'm very transparent with you today. I told you that little fun thing about Jane and my hair. I'm just opening up my spiritual innards to you today to try to get you to see that you can make a difference. No matter whether you're short or tall, whether you have the ideal nose or a nose like mine, God wants to use you. It's true. He doesn't give us all the same bread. He wants to use us. And there's something in this ministry, the Dyer Baptist Church and the Plum Creek Christian Academy, that you can do. And even beyond this ministry, there are other things you can do. He's given you bread and fish with which to serve. Well, next, and I'm going to give two more and stop. We make a difference when we let go of the bread and give it away. We make a difference when we let go of the bread and give it away. Cast thy bread on the waters. Cast thy bread on the waters. It shall return after many days. I'm also going to tell on myself again this morning. I don't think Pastor Lee knows this. I've been afraid to tell him. I think we got the rhubarb starts from Pastor Lee. I think we got, if not, we got rhubarb starts from April. And I went back to the back corner of our yard. We don't really have an area for gardening, but I like rhubarb pie. And I went back there, and there are maybe 6 or 7 square feet. And I planted these rhubarb roots. And my mother-in-law said, "Can't touch them the first year." Oh, patience. Talk about mess up this instant gratification thing. If I'm going to have rhubarb pie, I want it right now. But mothers, you can't touch the rhubarb the first year. You have to wait till the second year. Well, okay, this is the first summer. And the rhubarb came up. Oh, the wet, the rain this year, been good for rhubarb. Came up. But I kept hearing mother say, "Can't use it this year. Got to wait till the second year." And I'm weeding around it and looking at it and drooling and just loving a taste of rhubarb a year in advance. Well, one day I needed to come over here to the office. And I just happened to notice that the neighbor to the north of us, Dory, she's alone now. And life is changing for Dory. I noticed that she was out on her side of the landscape rails. It's definitive. She and Mike put the landscape rails. That's the property line. That's it. The line. I noticed that Dory was out on her side of the landscape rails, picking out weed. Now, she's not able to do that much anymore. She was out there with a cane, picking out weed. So I went on, came over here, and the next day I went out, and the rhubarb was cut off at the top of the ground. Cut off! My rhubarb! You talk about the pineapple story. That was my rhubarb! And if you don't know the pineapple story, you need to read it and you need to get revived. That was my rhubarb. Now we're looking maybe at 2 more years. I ran to the house. I said, "Gee, somebody," and I think it was Dory, don't want to gossip about it, "somebody cut our rhubarb right at the top of the ground." I said, "Phone her." I'm very courageous, you know. I said to Jay, I said, phone her. Jane phoned Dory, and after the usual small talk, Jane said, Dory, yesterday afternoon, where you were out picking weeds on your side of the landscape, Tim. Yes. And there was two big old weeds on your side, and I got them too. Jane said, Dory, that was rhubarb. We've waited a year and still have to wait another. That was rhubarb. Dory has apologized three times. The other day, I was out there trying to get my work done so I could come over and work in the school, but trying to get my work done. She calls to me. David. She said, I apologize to Jane, but I need to apologize to you personally. I'm sorry I cut off your rhubarb. Sorry. I said, Dory, that's okay. It'll grow back. She said, David, will you ever forgive me? I said, yes. She said, David, you see this, it's about 10 feet by 10 feet garden area. Nice planks. Great for maters and beans. That's what Mike used to grow there, maters and beans. She said, David, you know our plot over there? She said, Mike's gone and I can't get around and do it. Would you like to have our plot to grow what you want to grow on it? You can just use our plot. That's a lot to get for a little bit of forgiveness. A lot of tomatoes, a lot of beans, and even some limas. We make a difference. We make a difference when we let go of our bread and give it away. Just let go of it and give it away. Finally, we make a difference when we let others share in the plan. Jesus didn't do it all himself. Watch it. You say you're too long. Heaven will be long. You say you are not heaven. But I am talking about heavenly things. We make a difference when we don't have to hog the whole show, you know, and get all the credit. When we get others, like the disciples, involved in the miracle. Jesus let the disciples share in the miracle. He could have done it without them. Don't you think he could have multiplied the bread, fish? He could have done it without them. But he gave them the joy and the privilege of helping to make the difference. Let's make a difference.
We trust you have been encouraged or strengthened by the word today. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at graceglory7@juno.com. That's graceglory7@juno.com. We will reply to all those who contact us. And now, until next time, may the good Lord bless and keep you.